Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the pioneer format of Magic, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm joined by my co-host here.
Yeah. My name is Ryan Schwenk. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan. And today, you want me to introduce our guest today? Is that okay, Kevin?
Yeah, once again, we've got a great guest here, if you want to go ahead and introduce him.
Yeah, so before I introduce him, I wanted to ask you, Kevin, when you were 13 years old, what were you doing? Like, were you playing Magic? Well, I think you said your family plays Magic, right?
Oh, let me think. You know, that's probably about when I started having to pay for my own Magic cards, so I largely skidded away from it, I think.
Okay. So if, when I was 13, I was playing Revised, I think, or... maybe Ice Age. Actually, may have been a little bit after that, actually. So I was basically a casual player. But today's guest has some very big accomplishments by the time they're 13. So let me introduce today's guest, Milan Bayana. Is that correct?
Yep. It's good.
All right. So yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, give us a little rundown of your Magic history, your Magic accomplishments, things like that.
So I started playing competitively a year or two ago. And once I kind of got that bug, I started playing a lot of PTQs and eventually went to a couple Grand Prix. And there, I think my third Grand Prix, I managed to qualify for the Pro Tour, which is a pretty awesome accomplishment. I was 13 at the time, now 14. I played Legacy.
That seems really expensive.
Luckily, I borrowed cards from my local game store and a bunch of my friends, Dice City Games, who currently sponsors me as well.
Mm-hmm. So you said a year and a half ago you started by playing Standard, or you started by playing Legacy?
I started playing PPTQs, and those were mainly Standard. And luckily, my parents, I think... at my second PTQ, I won $200, and they realized, oh, this is actually something he can do. and so they were willing to drive me like an hour or so to PPTQs in the area. And from there, I managed to build a bunch of good decks and eventually start going to Grand Prix.
And so finally, a year and a half ago, was that Ixalan? No.
I think my first ever set was Eldritch Moon. I didn't play for another. Went to an Eldritch Moon pre-release with one of my friends, threw away the game, didn't play in it for another year, and then kind of like saw an ad online and remembered, went checked back through all my drawers, found some cards, and been playing nonstop since then.
Do you have any questions for him, Kevin? I had a couple more, but I wanted to give you a chance to ask him some stuff, too.
No, I mean, that's exciting. Congratulations. Just probably want to bring it back to, you know, I'm the guy who's always on topic, so what is your experience with Pioneer?
Right before quarantine, I 12-3'd Grand Prix Phoenix with Blue-Black Inverter. Then I've had... actually, last week I top four'd a PTQ with Blue Black Inverter, and I've had a bunch of 5-0s. Played some. Let's see. I played a decent amount of Pioneer. I mainly just play whatever PTQs on Magic Online nowadays. So those end up being Pioneer twice a week. So generally stay pretty up to date on the format.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Awesome. Great to hear that. That's exactly what we're looking for, is we wanted to bring in a professional,
a grinder or professional.
A grinder, someone that's got the real experience of what's going to happen, because everything just got shaken up. And, you know, for me, I'm really a big deck builder. I love to, brew the decks, go deep on the decks. So I'm excited right now because a lot of things are going to change. It's kind of a wide open world there. And that's what we're bringing into as today's topic, is that this Monday, the Monday right before we started recording this, big change to how companions are working in Pioneer, well, in all formats, is that instead of being able to cast them from your sideboard, you can now pay 3 at sorcery speed, put it into your hand, and then you can cast it from your hand. So, still an 8th card, that's still true, but the tempo loss, the mana loss, is a big difference for every single one of these, and we want to talk about what decks change, which companions themselves change, What decks get better because of all this change? What gets worse? You know, just really look at what's going to happen to this wide open meta that we just got thrown into.
So should we start off with our first topic then and have everybody kind of weigh in on what they think?
Yep, go right ahead.
So my first topic, so again, I'm asking you guys as you guys are the pros and I'm still kind of, you know, this person that's trying to get into competitive pioneer here. You know, as far as companions being playable or unplayable, I was wondering, like, which ones should I consider to play? Or which one should I just not try to even play with anymore? So should we just kind of go through all of them? Or just do you think it'd be a good idea just to start with the ones that were the most popular?
Yep, probably the most popular. And we can go on a somewhat generic level saying like, oh, hey, the blank blank is better or worse.
All right. Well, then I'd like to hear about Lurrus first. So maybe, Milan, if you don't mind weighing in, is Lurrus still a playable card in Pioneer? Is it not playable?
Yeah, I think out of the really powerful companions, so like Lurrus, Gyruda, Yorion, I think Lurrus has hit the hardest because the whole like strategy of the Lurrus decks was keep playing threats, use Lurrus to refill, and that's going to be a lot harder now when you have to give your opponent essentially an extra turn to stabilize before you deploy your Lurrus. And so like... the best decks that really played that were like Lurrus Burn, Lurrus Heroic, and Blue, White, and Soul. I think all three of those will either cease to exist or have to really adapt.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think that Lurrus is the one that's most impacted, being really the cheapest that sees play. And the fact that it is kind of such a tempo play most of the time, you want to be able to go that plus a spell on the same turn, and you're playing one, two drops always. So it's usually like one drop, two drop, maybe one and a two drop, and then Lurrus and a one drop. And that one's going to be the most impacted, and I think that's good because it was everywhere. Pretty clearly the most powerful. You know, it definitely had the biggest impact. And then the rest of them will kind of take a somewhat even nerf. You know, they're all going to kind of get hit with that same three mana tax. And I don't think that makes them all unplayable. Now, I don't think Lurrus will completely disappear as a companion. And if we're talking just about the card, I think that I'm going to be looking at more applications to put Lurrus into my main decks of certain decks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys that. Is it going to be more of a main deck card now instead of the companion card?
Yeah, I think it also is a very powerful card. It's like a pseudo Eternal Witness. And so it could definitely see a play in that role.
I believe, I mean, when I was making notes for this show, I thought Lurrus would probably show up a lot more in mid-range decks now. More like the beat-down decks, perhaps. Not so much like the hyper-aggro that we've seen it in before, but the ones that are playing like 23 mana, maybe 24 mana, and have a lot of 2 and 3 drops in there. So you still get good value out of them, but it's not going to just destroy people like he was doing in these other decks.
Yeah, I remember seeing a Jerry Thompson list, which was blue-black control featuring Lurrus. I think that deck has, in modern, I think that deck has serious promise now because it can easily play that 3-mana tax, and it also uses Lurrus very powerfully.
Yeah.
Okay, so I kind of want to go through some of the Lurrus decks. I'd like to kind of go through them one by one and see. I see sort of three places where they can go. It's either this is no longer a deck because Lurrus is not a companion. It's this will still be a deck, but it will no longer play Lurrus, so maybe it will start to play other three drops. Or this is a deck and it's still worth playing Lurrus. How do you split those three for the various decks? So you'd already named a couple of them. If we want to just jump right in, you had mentioned first like the Lurrus Burn deck, the red-white burn deck. Do you think that's still a deck? Do you think that it's still a Lurrus deck? Or do you think that it's still a deck but not a Lurrus deck?
I think for the Lurrus Burn deck, I think it's essentially gone. It's the third category. Because generally, the cards aren't very powerful. Maybe it'll probably be relegated to tier 2 or 3. Its real power was in that reload from Lurrus.
I agree there. I think that we'll still probably have a red aggro deck, but I don't think it's going to be as burn heavy, which will really change it, and I don't think it's going to be red-white. I don't think splashing just for the Boros charm is really worth it now.
I expect it to go back to the just plain mono-red builds with Torbrand and Goblin Rabble Master.
Yes, that's what I'm expecting as well. The next one I was really thinking of that I fit into that third category is kind of just dying is the Black White Auras deck. I think that, you know, it did somewhat exist before this format, but I don't think that it gained anything in this set. And without Luras, it really hurts. And that's another one where it's just such a tempo loss to really take off to that that turn to play Luras.
Yeah, I also agree. Like, neither of those decks existed pre-Luras, and I don't think they'll exist post-Luras.
The blue-white auras, you said?
I was saying the black-white auras.
The black-white, because blue-white didn't really exist, right?
Yeah, blue-white was like an adaption from blue-red, because everyone wants to play Luras.
As far as if we want to move to kind of the next category, unless you can think of some more that are dead. Oh, actually, I did kind of have one more that I think really hurt is the, I always called them napkin decks. I don't know if anyone actually caught on to that terminology, is the ones that are playing really like Kroxa and being more of a mid-range deck. So like the Cheville, the ones that some of them were playing.
Jund.
The Delirium guy. Yeah, Jund. I saw Grixis. I played with Mardu. Those weren't as good as Jund. But yeah, really the Jund Luras deck, I think that one also kind of dies. It was really, really banking on, you'd think it was a mid-range deck, maybe it could spare the three mana, but it was really banking on being able to abuse that Luras, playing things like, you know, the one drop
Unbridled Growth,
enchantment, Unbridled Growth, yeah, exactly. Without those, I think the deck kind of fizzles a little bit.
I definitely agree with that.
All right, so let me go kind of the next category of decks that were playing Luras and will still exist but won't play Luras, if you have any in mind.
Yeah, you can go ahead, Milan, because like I said, I have no idea about the competitive metagame right now.
In terms of deck that...
I can think of a couple if you want me
to just jump in first.
In there. The two that really came to mind are the Heroic deck. You know, it was a Feather deck before, and I think that it'll go back to being a Feather deck.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, I guess, also in that same way, blue-white in Soul Artifact, that will definitely go back to being blue-red, and I think, again, it'll be relegated to Tier 2.
That makes sense to me. And the third one I was thinking of was Scales. You know, I'd seen that with Luras. I think that that probably doesn't want Luras anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think most of the Luras decks either fade away or no longer want it, because especially in Pioneer, there aren't really control decks that can abuse Luras. Without cards like Bauble and Snapcaster Mage and Modern.
Now, I did have one deck, I think, that from my little limited testing, I'm still seeing it probably as a deck that will play Luras, is the Abzan Aristocrats deck, you know, the Rally deck.
Yeah, that deck was popular.
Just because, you know, it did pretty well. Just because of the power of things like Return to the Ranks, you're still wanting to play all of those two or less converted mana cost creatures. I think that it is worth it for that deck to just go all out and still run Luras. And when they get flooded, they can ploy him, but they weren't depending on him as their only source of like card advantage reach. So they've got some game still without being able to play him at a cheap
cost.
That
makes sense. Yeah. I think that deck will probably still exist.
Listening to you guys talk about Luras and like how far he's reached into the heart of the metagame is just... It's really eye-opening. I knew he was good and he was in these decks, but I'm like, wow, there was a junk deck? Yeah, I mean, I've not been following it at all, so I'm kind of happy they made this rule change so the metagame can open up.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it's hard to say whether or not, if he's being played in 60 different decks, is that still is that too limited of a metagame as long as they're different decks? But that's a good topic. I think this was a pretty good change. Let's talk Garuda next, just because I think that'll be a quick conversation, because he was really just one deck. You know, I'd see him in a couple things, but assumedly just the Garuda combo
deck. Yeah, that deck was pretty good towards the end of this format, and there were a bunch of people who put up good finishes. But I actually don't think it's dead. I thought it would be, but I think there are a good amount of curves where you have three mana lying around to spare, and obviously it'll make the deck a good deal weaker. Decreased your turn 4 kills and your resiliency to like Thoughtseize, but I don't think it's dead.
I mean, I would.
I think I'm there too. Oh yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I mean, yeah, I haven't really talked so much, so sorry. I wanted to give you my two cents. Yeah, I think that for Garuda, that it becomes a slower combo, and I think people will be shifting back to other combo decks that are maybe a little bit more consistent, like, you know, Lotus Breach or Inverter.
Yeah.
By itself, so
that's. That's kind of been my impression as well. I think that the deck didn't lose that much power, but in the metagame it might take a hit. I think that with more linear combo decks that it can't interact with, that will hurt it.
Yeah.
You know, if we're seeing Inverter turn back into a 60-card deck, if we're seeing Lotus Breach be popular, those will not be the best matchups for it if they can combo more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
As well as seeing some new tempo decks that are able to put a board state together and be able to, you know, counterspell something or just stop them. Thing of Spirit specifically, that'll also not be a great matchup. So that combination might hurt in the metagame, even if the deck itself didn't lose that much power.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. A sequence that I found interesting in Jaruda, that you can go like a turn 2 Paradise Druid and to turn 3 Wolf Willow Haven, which leaves you with enough mana to go fetch your Jaruda from your sideboard and then also cast it the next turn.
Yeah, that's good. And there are a non-zero number of games where you just have a Garuda in hand, and that's not bad.
I think it will likely kind of go back to tier 2 like many of these companion decks, but I think it's definitely like a metagame choice that if people start cutting like all their hate for that style, really just take a tournament by storm, similar to Lotus Breach.
You gotta be ready for it, but you don't have to fear it.
Yeah.
Should we do one of the other companions that didn't see a lot of play in a variety of decks? I was thinking Obosh next. What do you think?
Yeah, Obosh is kind of the close fourth, I would guess, as far as most played, so that's reasonable. I think that outside of Lurrus, Garuda, Yorion, they're all going to see a pretty major drop-off. I think that Obosh, again, you know, is mostly being played in very kind of linear aggro decks, and the difference between 5 mana and 3 mana is... or 5 mana and 8 mana is huge, so that one I think is going to take a particular hit.
Yeah, I agree. The curve out would always be like one drop, mana, around 3 drop, 4 drop, Obosh, and you just can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting till
so, like, we had like the green. There was like green red, I think, that had some, and there was like mono red. I believe there's two types, maybe 3 types of Obosh decks out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd seen black, but yeah, not really great.
We can just do a quick rundown of the rest before we get on to the big bird serpent in the sky.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. So, yeah, Lutri wasn't seeing play. Umori wasn't really seeing play, other than some real here and there. Kind of the same with Kahira, the one that boosts everything. And that one particularly takes a big hit, because if we were ever to see play, it would be because you're playing at turn 3. So losing that, I think it's way gone. What about the Zerda, because that one I think was really only seeing play in like creatureless control decks for the most part.
I think also similar to Kahira, was also played a lot in creatureless control decks.
True, it was another option. Yes.
And I actually think in that case it wouldn't take a hit, because they don't really care about waiting until turn 6 or paying the 3 mana extra cost. But I think any hopes of tribal synergy with that is just useless.
Yeah,
it's kind of almost like when you're playing it in a deck that it's just a freebie, it's almost like you start the game with a clue in play. You know, you have to pay 3 instead of paying 2, but if you could just start the game with a clue in play, pay 3 to draw a card at any point, you're going to find a chance to do that. So it's not bad in that way.
Yeah. I think, yeah, Zerda is very similar. Obviously, any things hoping to abuse the actual ability of Zerda are going to not work anymore.
Yeah, which I don't think there was anything in Pioneer. The only thing I'd really seen was like a combo deck that played him in the main deck.
And I guess there's Karuga, which never really saw much play.
Yeah, not really. And then the last one is Gigantha, which I think, again, if he's being played, he's kind of being played as a freebie.
Yeah.
So he's just a free 8th card, and I think that the decks that we're doing that will continue to do so. So we might actually see a lot more of him if Bant Spirits comes back.
I think...
Really?
Gigantha is like a card got worse, but I think it will end up being played more because the difference between it and all the other companions is not so pronounced anymore. Right? Like, Lurrus got
That's
a lot
a great
worse,
point, yeah.
Right? And Obosh got a lot worse and all that. So I think it could actually end up seeing a lot more play. Just as that free 8th card.
Did we miss any? I feel like we're not counting one, but I think that's probably it.
Yeah, let's move on to Yorion.
Yeah, Yorion, great. So, you know, I was big Yorion player. I loved it. I loved those grindy matchups, you know, like bouncing and flickering Elspeth's Conqueror's Deaths and bouncing it with Teferi, all that fun stuff. And, you know, of ones that got weaker, this definitely took a hit, but I feel like probably less than some of the others because you're playing in slower decks naturally.
Yeah, I think, like, the big place it's going to take a hit is in some specific scenarios, like when you want to use it to attack down a planeswalker or as a blocker against aggro, which you really can't do anymore. Like, I know in the Sultai deck, you would play on turn 5 with like a Trial of Ambition on board just to help stabilize against aggro. I think those decks are going to lose points against aggro.
Yeah, that and like I think the black-white auras that we would occasionally see with Demonic Pact, not being able to have that so freely available, I think will be a big hit. So do we want to play the same little game? Is deck will still exist, deck will exist with Yorion, and deck will just be gone? Sorry, I know I kind of messed up the order there. But like, let's talk Inverter, because I know that you are an Inverter player. Should you still be playing Yorion in Inverter?
I think towards the end of this format, people were already moving away from playing Yorion. I got my top eight without Yorion at all. And in the last PTQ, Yorion less Inverter took up the majority of the slots. So I actually don't think Yorion being nerfed is an issue at all to Inverter.
I think I agree with that. I think it is a good question to look at, is that it's more than just is it strong in the deck, is what meta changes. And when I do think about why Inverter moved to Yorion in the first place, it was largely because these decks that could play this eighth card and go over the top were rather strong against Inverter, which does have a lot of one-for-one trading. So if those are going to exist a little bit less in the overall metagame, then I think that that's actually an even bigger boost for the 60 card Inverter deck.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think also a lot of people really wanted to just try out a companion Inverter, the flashy new thing. Mm-hmm. I think like once people started trying, I think Canister tried playing a 60 card list again and did really well, and people started picking it up again.
Yeah. Now, same question, but for the white devotion deck. It was kind of black, blue-white devotion sometimes, even before it had Yorion. They were trying to splash blue sometimes, but that one's a big question for me because I test everything, but that's not a deck I play very much. Do you think that deck should still be splashing for Yorion?
I don't really think it will play Yorion anymore because it was also a combo deck, and the power of Yorion was kind of like getting that eighth card was pretty useful, but you were also trying to play it on curve. And so I think without being able to play it on curve, it's just going to be a lot worse.
That is true. There are occasional times where you could go off with your Nykthos, but it's definitely a tough question. I think that's probably my biggest question mark for this change, is whether or not that deck will want to consider Yorion. And if it means that both versions are viable, then to me that's pretty exciting, but I don't know if that's going
to
be true.
Nykthos is a very interesting one because of that. You can get to that 8 mana a lot easier. So yeah, that's probably the deck most likely to keep it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I agree with both of you guys that, I mean, you could play the white devotion deck either way if you're looking for a more, you know, combo-centric, you know, version. You just drop off, you know, the Yorion and those extra cards, and you just go for, you know, the Ballista Hela combo. But if you're playing in a metagame that maybe has more control elements or, you know, discard, and you need that attrition, then you could switch over to the, you know, 80-card version and then be able to just kind of grind them out.
Yeah.
And on the other side of things, if Lotus Breach does become a much bigger deck and you want to have more impactful sideboard cards, that might be a reason to go 60 cards because your sideboard cards are less effective with an 80-card deck.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
What other Yorion decks were there?
There's an Esper Control deck that did well recently. It did well in a couple PTQs. I think that deck actually will likely still play Yorion. Again, it becomes a lot weaker, but I think that was a deck that was fine playing Yorion like pretty late game, kind of just as like a free win con.
that makes sense. And I would kind of lump in there the other sort of controlling Yorian decks, so like the Bant Yorian or the Sultai Yorian. Those are more of Uro decks, but they just kind of ran them as a somewhat freebie, and then, you know, just extra value anytime you play them.
Yeah.
Now you were talking about one of the decks that is most advantaged from still being able to play him, and what came to mind for me is Fires. So Fires was banned in Standard, but the fact that you can play the Yorian for zero mana means that some games you're not going to be impacted at all about having to pay three mana from your lands to put them into your hand. So that's a place where, you know, it's definitely not nothing, because usually you can blink your Fires and then cast something else. But I think that that deck definitely does not particularly suffer from this change.
Yeah, it definitely harms your, like, very best draws when you're using your Fires mana to, like, make a Shark Typhoon token, use Luca, make an Agent of Treachery, blink it all. Mm-hmm. But generally, I don't think it'll be that bad for the deck.
So do you think that deck's going to jump up to being, you know, it was kind of floating around as viable, but not like frequent tier one. Do you think that's going to do much better in this new format?
The problem is the meta game will also kind of shift away from it, because the matchup against 60 card inverter is really bad. And if 60 card inverter ends up being the new most popular deck, I think it will kind of get pushed out because of that.
I could see that being really true. You know, they were liking to play against things like the Loris Burn and just hit them with a Supreme Verdict. Can't do that as much anymore.
Or like against even 80 card inverter, you had a pretty good matchup, because while they would try to grind, you could just grind them out better. But if they're comboing consistently on turn 5, you don't really have a chance.
All right, what else ran Yorian? You know, there were the Niv-Mizzet decks. I don't know if that deck gets hurt much. I don't think that deck was amazing.
I don't really have an experience with the Niv-Mizzet deck, but I'm guessing that'll... let me take a look at some lists.
Probably still run it, yeah. I don't think too many decks... Can you think of any decks that are going to just disappear because they can't play Yorian anymore? I don't feel like it was fully enabling decks. It was kind of just... adding power.
Yeah, people just add 20 cards to an old deck and call it a day.
So
yeah, and have a great time.
I kind of feel like the big change here is just going to be you're either going to play it sideboard as your companion, like in a blue-white Heliod deck, or they're just going to play it in the main deck now. You'll see less in the sideboard, but maybe more main board.
I guess it's something to consider, you know. Occasionally, something like Fires would play one copy of Yorian in their main board, and it was awkward because you draw the first copy, and it's always a dead card because you've got a version in your sideboard already. That slightly changes because it's three mana better than a dead card, but I am not sure if that's a huge consideration.
I wanted to talk about a different topic, if you guys don't mind moving on to the next point. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. I think I've said most of what I want to say.
Yeah, so go ahead. I kind of guessed what you're going to say, but yeah, go for it.
I mean, we've been talking a lot about playable and unplayable. The next thing I wanted to talk about, and we kind of talked about this already, you know, during the playable or unplayable discussion, is what decks are going to be affected the most. And you kind of already talked about which ones just kind of disappear from Yorian, which ones disappear from Luris. But what about decks that, you know, kind of got pushed out by companions, and maybe they'll be playable again?
I think, like, the good decks before the era of companions that essentially disappeared was Bant Spirits is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then I think Mono Black, although that one was pushed out a little before the rise of the companions.
That's definitely on my list as well. I think both of those are high on my list of I want to go back, and this deck deserves a lot more testing. It was still good at the end of the last season. And they did get some tools, so I think that's also worth looking at, is what they got from Ikoria before Companions changed everything. So I think Mono Black, you know, they got Heartless Act, they could play Luris in the main deck if they wanted, they could play, you know, there's like the Haunted, like the 4/5 Menace guy, maybe.
Yeah, I think also Sultai Delirium was sort of pushed out, as well as Is It in Soul?
Mm-hmm. But those could make a comeback, you think?
Yeah, I think those could definitely make a comeback.
The other one I'm really looking at, I think, is Phoenix. You know, got Sprite Dragon in the set, it got Riel, might be playable, and that deck really just didn't take off because it had no playable companion.
Yeah, it might take off again. And I think without, like, really efficient discard outlets, like Faithless Looting getting banned in Modern really hurt the deck there.
Yeah.
And Phoenix just isn't very good.
So you guys were talking earlier about black-white auras, and I thought that was actually a decent deck before the companions came around. But is it just not playable now, like in any way?
Well, I think like it had like one or two good finishes before companions, but Lurrus just fit so well into there because it didn't even need them to change a single card from the 75. That it got a power boost from that. I think it will stay fringe for in the companionless world.
Because, yeah, I guess you could say, you know, it did really well, like, in that first Pioneer Grand Prix. But after that, it shows up when you least expect it, and it does really well because people aren't expecting it. But when people are expecting it, I kind of feel like it doesn't do that well.
Yeah, the Dredge Lotus Breach thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do think Lotus Breach deserves some mention because that was really the one deck that survived the companion meta. You know, it was good before it, and despite companions being good, it still showed up. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people right off the bat are thinking, okay, if companions are weaker, Lotus Breach isn't weaker. Is it the best deck in the format right now?
I, again, think like the whole thing is Lotus Breach is good when you forget about it.
yeah.
And so I think, like, if everyone's running one Damping Spirit on the board, it's a great pick. If everyone's running 2+, it's real bad.
That might be reasonable. I do think that, you know, if we're talking for competitive players, like, keep it in mind. Don't think that everyone else is going to have hate for it, because I think that people will be trying it again right now. It didn't lose anything.
So there's a fun game figuring out which tournament it's going to come back in. If you can figure it out correctly, you get 2 extra sideboard slots.
Yeah, you know, I did have maybe one more deck that was, I think, putting up results before companions and then disappeared entirely, was the, like, Mono Green Walkers deck. I really like that deck, and I couldn't put my finger on what hated it other than I just have to assume it's companions. So I'm wondering if it can come back. You know, maybe it can even try the new Vivian.
Yeah, I think that popped up a little bit, although I'm not sure. It might come back. I don't have much experience with that deck.
Sorry, I was gonna say, I think one of the archetypes that is affected the most by this rule change is control, because I feel like a lot of control decks were kind of hated out because everyone had so much card advantage from these companions and being able to play them as an extra card, and they couldn't be thought seized. You know, I thought that control kind of, like, tapered off during this last metagame. Would you guys agree that control is going to, you know, maybe make a comeback in this next season?
Yeah, I mean, control could definitely make a comeback. I think, really, Inverter, I think, will definitely be the tier one, like, S-plus tier deck heading into the first couple tournaments, and we'll see if, like, the metagame adapts to it, but Inverter ends up always adapting to anything you throw at it. Right?
Well, except for a ban. I'm not sure if it could take an Inverter ban.
I don't know. Have you seen the deck?
Oh, I mean, hang on. What was that terrible version we had tried to brew, Ryan, as a way to put your whole graveyard into your... There was something I had
was
that
it
would
an
exile your whole library.
Or something? Maybe?
Something. I don't remember. I'd have to look it up again. But the last kind of topic as far as... I mean, this isn't really a topic change, but... You know, we talked about decks that existed before companions and disappeared during companions. Now, the other thing that might be hidden and is kind of the next level of the format is any decks that would have become a deck but didn't because companions cut them off. And that's really where I think the Brewers are going to be going is, you know, looking at some of the cards that came out of Ikoria. Like, you know, I was thinking, like, what's that Jeskai enchantment that draws a ton of cards? Or, you know, we got a couple new humans cards, and humans just didn't take off because they couldn't run Lurrus. Those might be where I'm looking next to see what's the next thing in the format that might be able to do something. Oh, I had also meant to ask, or to say, because we were talking about control. You know, I'm not sure if I saw control as dead, because one of the people I test with always plays control. But, maybe we'll see some... Sorry, my dog is barking in the background. Maybe we'll see some comeback on that. I think that it was still around. I think it was always a reasonable deck, like blue-white control.
Yeah, I mean, it's always reasonable, but I felt like it lost a lot of its abilities to close out games with companions, because they those companion decks just stuck around longer and longer and longer, and it made it more and more difficult for control to close them out. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, Milan, you were kind of going into a little bit of a what you saw as some power rankings. Did you want to continue with that topic?
Yeah, sure.
I was going to ask that too. Yeah, so like what's going to be S rank? What's going to be like A rank?
Yeah, so like I...
Or tier one, tier two.
For day one, I think S tier is definitely going to just be Inverter. The big question for Inverter is Jace Friend's Prodigy, main deck or not. That was a big change that came towards the end of last season. Of Pre-Ikoria. And the Jaces were cut during the companion metagame just because they evolved a cheap removal. And so it'll be interesting to see if it comes back.
True. When everyone needed to do two damage to kill a Lurrus, it was pretty important to be able to kill a Jace at the same time.
Yeah. So I think that'll be the big division point in the beginning. I think I tested lists with both. I think I'm personally going to start with the four main deck Jace version.
Okay.
Just after like some theory crafting, as it just seems pretty good against the majority of top decks. So continuing on to those top decks, I had in like my A tier or tier two, White X Devotion, either 80 or 60 card. Mm-hmm. Lotus Breach.
Yep.
Definitely.
And
Mono Red?
I didn't.
Is Mono Red too? Really?
Yeah, I don't have Mono Red probably in my top tier. I think we have to test it again, see what exactly it was missing or could have gained.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact list the direction Mono Red is supposed to go now. And that's the issue. And then like in the decks that could easily win, but so I guess technically tier three. So like Gyruda, Spirits, Blue, Red, and Soul likely, and then like the Blue, White, X, Yorion deck, which is like Yorion Fires, Esper Control. That was my general impression of the new format.
Okay, I think I had Spirits, I had Fires, and I had Lotus Breach a little bit higher. I think that those are all going to be, at least in people's minds right off the bat, very good decks. It is definitely going to be tough to say exactly where the meta is going to shake out here, because I think that all of those decks have play against each other and depending on how they build them.
Yeah. I think Inverter, while it's always like a strong deck at any time, obviously there is no metagame for it to adapt to right now. And so like that's sadly Inverter's weakness. At the beginning of like, if you look at the beginning of the companion format, it just doesn't really know what to do.
Yeah. I do think that I'm going to A, defer to you, and B, agree with you in that Inverter would be where I'd put my most likely best deck coming into the new format.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. It'd be interesting, though, to see if any Ikoria cards like kind of make a splash. I know we were discussing some of like the cards that we found powerful.
You know, or any M21 cards. You know, things are coming up real soon. But I do agree with that. If you guys haven't listened to it, go back and listen to our spoiler episode or our set review episode, because we do talk about a lot of cards that never really showed up, and I think some of that's because of companions.
Mm-hmm.
We also, you know, just got to brag, we really called a lot of exactly what was going to be good on those companions.
I totally agree with the power rankings, but I feel kind of strange not seeing a red deck in there. I feel like red's going to find its way into the top tiers sooner rather than later. People are going to push a super fast aggro deck, and I don't see anything right now in your power rankings that would... I mean, maybe in Soul, but in Soul kind of feels a little fragile to me.
What about... have you guys been seeing the Winota decks that have been showing up?
In Standard, yes.
Well, in Historic too, but yeah. Potentially in Pioneer?
I haven't seen any lists, so...
That'd be interesting.
That's another one that didn't really have a good companion that might see some potential here.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be interested in seeing that. So the next thing we already kind of started to talk about here, kind of the last part, like you said people are going to be brewing, in this you know next few weeks as this rule effect or this rule change goes into effect. So let's kind of finish this up with predictions. What are people going to be brewing? What are people going to be playing? What direction is the metagame going to go? So maybe we can have everybody kind of give us, you know, your 2 cents on this topic. So,
well, maybe I should have waited to say this this silly Winota stuff, but yeah, I mean, I'm going with Lotus is going to be a strong thing off the bat. I bet Spirits is going to come back hard. Maybe some other Cocoa if I was going to go wild here. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, what we've said is in the power rankings, I think deserves to be there. And then some of those fun ones. I think Mono Green I want to see come back as well.
Okay. What about you, Milan?
I think also Mono Black might come back. That's probably my bet for like Mono Black is generally pretty good against Inverter. Just the recipe of Thoughtseize plus plus quick damage is pretty good. And that's the main deck I expect to return, other than the aforementioned ones.
Do gotta jump in. Yeah, I don't think we fully appreciated the fact that if people are putting their companions in their hand, they are thought seizable again. So that is a nice little added benefit to the black decks, which had kind of been thought seize had definitely gotten a little weaker for a bit there.
That's insane. Thought seize is weak. It's blasphemy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you guys don't mind, I had a couple ideas that I wanted to share. Yeah, I also agree with the collected company decks. I kind of feel like there's still a lot more exploring you can do with those types of decks, those types of cards. I think that I'd like to say that we even get back more graveyard decks. I mean, it depends on what direction the hate goes and what people are trying to, like we were talking the other day about how someone's like saying they wouldn't play Rest in Peace against Inverter, and if people are just kind of moving towards disruption instead of, you know, trying to get rid of graveyards, I wouldn't be against seeing some more of the graveyard strategies like Phoenix come back.
I'd love to see Dredge come back. Yeah, Dredge. Yeah, that deck hasn't been good in a while. And you know, we do have a guy. He's the mod of the Pioneer Discord. Wouldn't hurt to have him on. I know that he's a huge Dredge player. Me and him back in the day with Frontier, I think played it. He's given me some points before about when Dredge would be good again. I wouldn't mind hearing his opinion. Maybe I'll touch base with him offline.
I think there's one more. There's one more deck that I think might do well. I wouldn't be surprised if Hardened Scales finds some way to make a comeback, just because they kind of had like that artifact thing that saves all your
Ozolith. Yeah,
Ozolith. I think that's got.
See if that's any good when you can still play 3 drops.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some form of that maybe show up in like the tier 2 or tier 3. I guess in Milan's power rankings, Inverter would be tier 0.
Yeah.
And then tier 1 would be like the Devotion and Lotus Breach, and then the others would be tier 2. So in that type of ranking with Inverter at 0, I would put Scales maybe making a comeback to like tier 2.
Yeah.
So those are my picks.
I think like
those are my predictions.
Inverter will likely stay at the top of the metagame for a while, until people really adapt to it. Because like the whole thing with Inverter is it's such a powerful deck, you can't adapt just by adding 2 sideboard cards like you can to Lotus Breach.
Yeah.
You need to really like change your deck choice essentially. And so I think as long as people don't do that, it's gonna remain at the top for a while.
All right, I guess I got one great MTG finance question almost. We've got about a month left of this format, really, because we're seeing new cards already starting to come out. Will there be any bans before this format ends? Yes or no? Hot take question here.
No.
I agree. I think there's no way. I do think that it's worth thinking about. You know, and maybe that's good for people. Maybe they can go and say, hey, I know I've got at least a month that I can play Inverter, and I know it'll be safe.
Yeah, there's not enough data. They're not going to be able to collect enough data, I think, to be able to make any more bans. Even using only MTGO to decide this is not that good. Just because, and I've said this many times before, the people that play MTGO, I mean, it's more difficult, I think, to put like a variety of decks together. They kind of focus their collection on certain types of decks. Whereas if you have paper, it's a lot easier to borrow and, you know, trade and to put all these other decks together, so you see a lot more variety.
Yeah. Okay. I think that could probably bring us towards the end of our show here, unless you guys have anything else big on the topic of the meta.
I do.
Oh, okay.
M21, I won't stop you here, M21 right. Spoiler leaks. You guys want to talk about that real quick?
I don't want to discuss the leaks, if that's what you're specifically talking about. Right. I mean, there have been a few actual spoilers that have been posted somewhat widely.
Okay.
I don't know if that's what you mean.
Yeah, I posted some pictures of cards that showed up for M21. I don't know if you guys wanted to talk about that real quick or not, but I'm fine not talking about it if you want to skip it.
Yeah, nothing that's blatantly meta-changing, I think, so we'll touch base with them when we do a set review, which will be in just a few episodes. So, if you guys aren't already, subscribe to us. We are available on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on... What's our normal one?
Is it Podbean. Podbean, yeah.
Yeah, Podbean. That's a good place to find us. And as well, you can reach out to me. I'm always on Twitter, at MTGPioneer.
Yeah, for me, you guys can also find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky. And my website is www.thejapanhobbyist.com. And
so, Millen, any way to reach you that you want people to know? Anything that's cool going on in your life? Anyone that you want to just shout out right now? Now's a quick chance.
I'm on Twitter, at MGGMillen. I produce guides on occasion. I post about lots of magic stuff.
Well, who's your sponsor again? You want to give them a shout out?
I'm sponsored by Dice City Games, which is a great local store in Maryland. They help.
Do they have a website?
Yeah.
They can Google it. Yeah, okay. Come on.
Well, I want to give them a chance to promote.
Yeah. Dice City Games was actually a bunch of really cool. Well, before quarantine, ran a cool tournament series. They do a lot of legacy and older formats too, which is pretty awesome.
Cool. Definitely want to really appreciate you coming onto the show. This was interesting. I'm glad we had a perspective that really is in the deep of the format. And you know, we've had a couple inverter players on here, and they're talking it up, and I got to agree with them.
And also, I hope that you can come back in the future, maybe to talk more about the metagame. Maybe next season, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'd love to. If anyone wants to do an inverter deep,
or maybe by next season he'll be too big for us.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, well, good luck on your future endeavors, and we're going to kind of wrap up the show here. Thank you so much for joining you, and one more time, I'm Kevin Finkel. Ryan was my co-host here, and we are the First Pioneer Podcast, where we keep you up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer.